Today is Thursday. It is August 9th, 2018. It's 11:12 in the morning. I'm John Williams. This is The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio. Listen for me weekdays 1 to 3 and Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 12 noon.
And I'm Krista McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune Editorial Board.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, creator of the comic strip Prickly City, and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of The Business Lunch on WGN and other things.
I'm Eric Zorn, the thrice weekly columnist for the Tribune. I was just looking up whether it's best to say tri-weekly or thrice weekly.
Well, oh, because
you're settled on thrice.
Well, tri-weekly implies every 3 weeks, and thrice weekly is three times a week, which is how often I appear in the Chicago Tribune. Thank you. And now, on to the show.
All right, too late for the podcast to get off to a running start.
If there were a truck parked in your neighborhood that was full of merchandise, maybe, I don't know, shoes, what would you do? And by the way, the truck is locked, so you don't know what's inside. Oh, and if the cops put that there as some sort of bait truck, what would your first thought be? Good policing by the cops? Arrest the thieves who break in? Or could the cops possibly be doing something dumber in Chicago right now than this sort of borderline entrapment? I'll go first.
I think you already have.
Well, I just want to make sure that it is clear that this didn't just happen after this past weekend, but it has been going on for a while, and I think under the best of circumstances, this looks like a bad idea, Steve Bertrand. What do you think of the bait truck sting operation they're using to try and catch thieves on the South Side?
Well, it's not like they have hookers on the corner trying to lure Johns, you know, where they're literally entrapping
someone. Okay, I think it's almost exactly like that, but keep going.
Well, it's not, because you don't know what's in the truck. It's just a truck sitting there. Like it could be a car or a house locked or anything like that. No one's saying, hey, come over here, honey, and I'll do this, and then you arrest them. It's a little less than entrapment in there. I'm not sure I love the idea, but they're not saying, you know, they're in trouble with guns being stolen from rail cars not far from here.
We talked about this a little bit at our editorial board meeting. It's one thing to have a sting operation, right, which prostitutes, they've done drugs. If they wanted to have an actual sting operation to target the theft of merchandise from rail cars, from these containers, then you would put up surveillance. And by the way, why is Chicago police doing this and not the rail company? That's a legit sting operation. But placing merchandise in a place like this and in Inglewood, filled with Nike shoes by the Chicago Police Department at a time when they're trying to build trust with that exact community, seems like, I'm going to go with John's third description, a really dumb idea. It's not entrapment, but it's not, to me, good police
work.
Did
we know there were shoes in the truck?
Yes. The strangest detail is that they were unmarked Nikes. Is that correct?
Yeah, but the truck was locked, right? I mean, it's a truck with a lock on the back, and you don't know what's inside.
So it's like, let's make a deal. It's box number 3.
And then you go in and there's shoes.
Or they're goats.
Yeah.
In general, I think it's not a bad idea. And they've been using this with cars. They do bait cars to try to nab auto thieves. They use it with bicycles to try to nab bicycle thieves. So the police can monitor the actual, they have a GPS device on the bicycle or in the car so they can catch the thieves. I don't think that's a terrible idea. I don't think it would be a bad idea to put a car out on the railroad tracks and monitor it and then catch the guys or women who are breaking into it. But this particular operation, where it was and when it was, right after this weekend, right when the trust between the Chicago Police Department and the African American community is at an ebb, it was just a clumsy and badly timed, badly done.
But, has there even been one arrest?
Yes.
From the shooting last weekend.
No.
So just think about that, because you got to believe of the 70 people shot, somebody on the south or west side probably has a clue as to who pulled a couple of those triggers. They don't have one arrest on that a week later.
That speaks to a low level of trust from the African American community, right? It speaks to the dangers of being a snitch in a community like that, and in any community, but particularly in that community, and the fact that, you know, they're not going to clear a lot of these murders. So you really go out on a limb if you're going to be telling on someone who you think pulled the trigger. It's not surprising that they're not solving these crimes.
Well, I don't want to go into like a tangent, but I mean, that's also, then those people remain on the street. And so if you live in those communities and you actually want people punished and taken off the street, you do need to tell police. But I get that this whole operation with putting a container full of stuff right in their midst is just, to me, it's like lazy police work. It's not entrapment.
No, it's not. Legally not.
It's legally not, but it's not smart, and it's not surveillance in a way that I think would make sense.
Well, the ACLU has weighed in on this, and I suspect they're going to view this as a form of entrapment. So to dismiss that out of hand is...
I don't think they will. I don't think it is. It's not entrapment is if you were like to go over to a guy who is nearby and say, hey, I bet there's shoes in that truck. You want to break in and see? That would be entrapment. You'd be encouraging him to commit a crime. Well, just the actual fact of there being merchandise available to be stolen is not entrapment.
Well, Scott, you have a cold heart. Let me ask you this.
No, I don't.
It's just tiny. That's all.
In an impoverished community.
Yeah.
In an impoverished community where you think maybe there's merchandise in there that you could either keep or sell, do you have any sympathy for the people that are tempted by the parked truck, by the bait truck?
Oh, yeah. I think in that environment, in those communities, absolutely. Sure. I mean, and I have actually sympathy for a lot of people who are in those conditions and their way out, their way to deal. And, you know, there aren't a
it's just kind
not
of
a practical way out.
Pathetic.
But, and like you said, 74 shootings in the city over a weekend and not one arrest? Really? And
you understand.
But unmarked Nikes, we will protect them.
Well, these aren't. I mean, it's not either or, Scott. But it is. I'm saying the optics are terrible on this particular operation. And but I do understand why they have a hard time solving these shootings.
Because, but Eric, it is either or because the CPD continually complains that they are understaffed and they're stretched to the limit and all this other stuff. And so if that's the case, then I'd say this jokingly: Nikes versus human lives. They're going
That may be a cartoon for you, my friend. That may be a cartoon for you.
We dare defend our unmarked.
Well, the mayor was so there was the mayor pleading with people the next day, saying, "If you know something, say something." Right? I didn't even think about that. I thought, "Oh, gee, we'll solve these murders, or we won't solve these murders, but investigators will look into it." And there was the mayor saying, "You guys know who some of these people were. Come on and tell us, help us." Isn't it ironic that the people that need the protection the most from these bullets are afraid to actually cooperate?
Don't you understand why they're afraid to cooperate with
police?
Sure,
I do.
Come on. I mean, you know, and at the same time, they're looking at each other going, this police department, they don't, they're the ones who have the cone of silence, code of silence. They protect each other, too. They see things going on in their department. They don't say anything.
But you, so, yeah.
I mean, it's
a circle. We're like talking in a circle.
They're
not going to solve the crimes because there's no trust and the people won't speak to police. And so the crimes are going to continue to happen because these perpetrators, these violent criminals who went out and shot into crowds are still out there roaming around.
So when those people marched up, actually they didn't march up Lakeshore Drive, but they sort of started at Belmont on Lakeshore Drive and then went over to the Cubs game. And people were ticked and they said, this is a stupid idea and we didn't do it to you and why are you sharing the pain? And then the next day, that was Thursday, so then that weekend starts on Friday and all hell breaks loose. And so I thought on Friday on my show, or was it the following Monday, I said, okay, maybe that march wasn't such a bad idea, right? Because these people are desperate for some help.
Well, I'll stop you right there. Who's desperate for the help? The people who aren't talking to police about the killers?
The people marching up Lakeshore Drive.
The people are desperate for help. Why aren't they talking to police to get these killers off the street?
Steve, I think that's pat. I really do. I think when you're people who live in those, I mean, I don't live there and you don't live there. None of us live there. But
no.
I believe that if you were in that situation and in that community and being asked to be the one who's going to be talking to the police, being the one who's identified as that person, that you feel that you're going to put yourself in danger, you're going to put your family in danger, and that the police have such a poor track record of solving these crimes anyway that the person who you identify as the shooter is probably going to remain at large and may come after your family. I mean, I don't think it's that simple as being like, see something, say something. I think much more.
I don't disagree with you, but I don't disagree with you, Eric, and yeah. I don't mean to imply that it is simple, but I mean, just John, to hear you, you know, exasperatedly say that these people are desperate and they're helpless. It's like, well, there are steps that could be taken, and I'm with them. I mean, I'm for the marches, I'm for all of that, but there are things that they can be doing too.
What were you going to say?
I was just going to say that they know that they're. So, I mean, did you the? It was just heart wrenching to watch the collection of people standing outside of Stroger Hospital and sobbing and mothers wailing about their children being, and you can't. You can't put everything on police if you're not going to cooperate to get these people off the street. They know. They probably, some of these people, it was a drug thing, or it was a social media war, it was a fight over a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a gang issue or drugs. So they know who the perpetrators are, or they have a pretty good idea.
Here's something I don't know. I don't know if there's a way for people to get information to police anonymously.
Well, sure.
In
a secure way where they really realize that this is not going to be traced back to them.
I think that's pretty obvious, the answer to that, Eric. I mean, my goodness, you don't have to stand on the street corner and say, Steve did it. You make a phone call, or I don't know how.
I haven't heard anything about anonymous tip lines.
Well, the cops are in the hospital rooms in Stroger. I mean, the detectives are there interviewing people who have been shot. I mean, that's like step one in an investigation.
So you're in Stroger Hospital. You've been shot, and you know who shot you. And the cops come in and say, "Tell me who shot you," and you think that they should say the name.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying, I don't know that that's realistic.
I wouldn't.
Some street justice from John Williams.
Well, I'd let the cops mete out some justice. You know, so at Stroger, they had 200 people at one time milling about because of the bodies coming in. At Mount Sinai, they actually had to turn people away for a while. So I asked the guy in charge of the emergency room at Mount Sinai yesterday. I said that I kind of ping-pong back and forth between who I'm mad at or what the solution is. You know, is it jobs or is it the police or is it the mayor? I don't know how we ratchet the violence down. But I said to him, lately my head is here. It's the mothers and the fathers of these kids. I mean, the ultimate responsibility, you know, Steve, the marchers, they may want to share the pain, but it's their problem to fix. Why is your 11-year-old out at 3 in the morning? Or what were you doing with this 18-year-old all along? Until those mothers and fathers decide, you know, where are the fathers and what are the mothers doing? But until they decide to ratchet the crime down in their families, control their kids, control their families, do more for them, that problem doesn't get fixed. So I asked the surgeon, what do you think of that? And he just kind of sighed and said, it's not that simple. You know, that these are people who themselves grew up in a violent, impoverished environment, and they're flawed themselves. So it's not so easy, mister.
Well, I believe that's part of the problem, but I also know that when you have these communities where there's not much development there's not many jobs there, that the schools are in bad shape.
You've got
a lot of issues going on that are making these communities the way they are, and to say if the parents would only read to their kids
it's just the issue of like teen pregnancy and how that starts the clock on kids dropping out of school, boyfriends not having to take responsibility. Lack of education, the stress that puts on young people trying to raise a child and having no money for diapers. And I mean, it is part of the issue is the family structure and the breakdown of the family unit. And it kind of bugs me that we never talk about that in the media. We're too afraid to kind of add that to the mix. Yes, it's the mayor. Yes, it's lack of development. I could talk about that all day long. But that family breakdown is part of it, too.
Scott, do you think this is going to cost Mayor Emanuel, if he is even allowed to run for office? We'll get to that in a second, but do you think this is going to cost Rahm?
Yeah, I think, clearly this is going to be an issue coming
into... Will it cost him
the
election?
No.
How about you, Eric?
Will it cost him the election? I've given up political forecasting since I predicted many times the demise of Donald Trump's candidacy.
Were wrong about Trump.
But since you asked, no, I mean, I would think if you had to put money on this, if you had to put money on this mayoral's race, you could put the money on the guy with the most money, Rahm Emanuel. But this, I think, is going to hurt him, but I don't think it's going to kill him.
Well, Kristen, just talk briefly about your piece you wrote this week. Pat Quinn, the former governor, has a petition drive, and it appears it's going to be on the ballot in November. Should we limit the mayoral term to 2 in the city of Chicago? And if more people than not say yes, Rahm can't even run. You want to forecast that? And what do you think of Quinn's effort here?
Well, it's probably not going to be on the ballot. That's the biggest issue. They've got the correct number of signatures, but the city council already loaded up the ballot. You can have 3 questions on the ballot. They already packed it with garbage to make sure that
other
his didn't get
issues
on there.
Like there
right. Do you
issues?
Like the so sun it will end up better in... than the sunset? hot dogs, right. ketchup, or no? What was the right. third one?
I mean, oh, it's like, should we spend more money on like helping people who need help? Yes.
And they do that, right? This isn't the first
yes,
time they
do
that.
Oh, no,
that's
they
how
do
you
it.
Control
they
that.
They do it every year, and that's why it's frustrating because he did what's a citizen initiative. He went out and got 85,000 signatures. That takes so much work, and you have to, it's like an engineering feat to get it put together because they have to be page by page and stapled with, you know, this big engineering. They had to bring it in on a dolly, whatever. But because the city council is allowed to do that, we're never allowed to have a citizen initiative on the ballot. So I think it will end up in court, but I think ultimately with the politics in the city and the expert elections attorneys that the mayor will hire, it will not end up on the ballot, which is unfortunate.
Can I jump on this too and just say that Pat Quinn, while governor of the great state of Illinois, ignored this issue for the 6 years he was in office?
No, he didn't.
Mayoral terms, you mean?
Yes, I actually cartooned about it.
Mayoral term limits or just term limits?
Term limits.
Because, no.
And this was a guy who said, you know, who actually, before he was elected to statewide office, ran a campaign about with term limits. And then, as soon as he was in a position to do anything about it, did, well,
the legislature
nothing.
Wouldn't pass it. They never passed it to allow it on the ballot. He can't. He was for term limits.
Well,
but
be Thomas Jefferson for me for a second, Steve Bertrand. Should I mean these complications notwithstanding? Do you like the idea of limiting Rahm or any mayor to two terms?
I'm not a big term limit guy. I don't think, except when I am.
Yeah,
I
mean, because depending on
so,
who the,
I mean,
the guy
I think
is.
Clearly, I think clearly the speaker should be term limited.
Totally.
So I think there are certain situations where there should be limits. I don't know how I feel about it for mayors. I really don't. I mean, it seems to have worked well. It does work well in New York.
Chicago is the biggest city in America. Well, it's the only major city in America, Pat Quinn tells us, without term limits for the mayor. Right?
I mean, know that that's true, but there are other big cities that have. I mean, the issue, too, is not that we should have it or shouldn't. They won't let us vote on it.
Yeah.
That's the issue. Like, put it on there, and then if you don't like it, you know, start your campaign against
Absolutely.
It. But we don't even get to weigh in is the problem.
I want to talk about the media for a second. In broadcast news, WGN Radio and TV will, in fact, it appears at least as of today, and this has been going back and forth, too, but it looks like WGN will not fall into the Sinclair orbit. The FCC said that Sinclair had not been sufficiently transparent about its ownership plans, and so now the Tribune has pulled from the merger agreement, and in fact, they're suing Sinclair for $1 billion.
Do we get any of that?
Oh, yeah. I think you get most of it.
You don't get it.
The Mincing Rascals.
The Mincing Rascals, yeah.
Are some of you on the print side, well, I don't know, this is a broadcast thing, but I think a lot of people are happy to see the bonuses not be paid to the people that were going to make these deals when all of these mainstream media entities are struggling to survive or be as successful as they once were. And now the big paychecks for some of these people evidently aren't going to go through.
The paychecks will come from someone else.
Somebody else will buy them, and bonuses will be paid.
I wish I bought my violin in for this. Play a sad song.
Well, but you know, the reason, it's interesting because, look, this is the largest TV ownership group in America, and it's very, very conservative, and it parrots some of Donald Trump's policies and thoughts. And we've all seen that video where all of the local TV station anchors are saying the same script that's kind of fake news, you know, that sort of parrots some of the president's thoughts about that. And the concern was that this would be too much of a conservative voice in America. But that's not what killed the deal, as I understand it.
No.
It was that they weren't being transparent about who was actually going to be running the station, even if it wasn't owned by Sinclair.
Well, they were going to have a used car salesman
owning
WGN-TV.
But Sinclair would still run it.
Right.
And the FCC said, wait a minute, you can't be doing that. They put the thing on hold, and then the deal blew up.
My favorite thing of the whole thing was, right, that was the concern that it was going to become this conservative automaton sort of, and that's what people were fighting against. And when it sort of fell through, President Trump tweeted that it was too bad that we were going to lose this growing conservative voice in the country. I mean, he tweeted out the very opposition of what people were trying to make their case against.
Here's what I have for you guys. Is there a sufficient conservative voice in this country? You know, the mainstream media appears to be in the president's minds, and maybe in some of yours, this monolith, the mainstream media of liberalism, and we need to fight back with conservative voices. So there is the sort of support for a Sinclair. Is there a need for a major conservative voice to push back, or do we have a sufficient conservative voice or voices in this country? Is my question for you?
I think we do have sufficient voices for conservative media. I think the bigger complaint is that the mainstream media, by and large, in their day-to-day reporting, always offers kind of a more liberal slant. And so I think what we need are more news directors and editors making sure that they are giving the conservative voice a fair shot in their day-to-day coverage. But generally speaking, I think if you are looking for conservative news, it's pretty easy to find now more so than ever.
And I think the monolith is far more lith and far less mono lately. I mean, really, the big media that we're talking about is becoming diminished more and more. And the reason Sinclair was going after Tribune was not, no offense, for WGN or WGN Radio or all the other TV stations. It was going after it for one single entity, and that was WGN America. And WGN America is in between 74 and 76 million homes. And Sinclair has stated in the past few years they want to be a direct competitor to Fox. How do you do that? You buy WGN and by extension WGN America, 76 million homes, boom.
Yeah.
You're competitive. So that's what they were after.
Who broke the story about Hillary Clinton's email server?
It was
the New York Times. Right. Not a liberal
Fox
conservative
News, not Breitbart,
sort of
outlet. Something like that.
I think it's very difficult to judge right now this conservative liberal sort of a view of the media because of Donald Trump's behavior and demeanor. Because there's so much of what's being covered is extraordinary of politics is outside of right and left. It's about the way the guy behaves. It's about what he tweets about today, which is completely inappropriate, or what he lied about yesterday. If you decry the lies and ridicule this man for doing that, that doesn't make you a liberal. My two favorite shows on MSNBC, which are clearly left compared to Fox.
It's left.
My two favorite shows are hosted by Republicans or people who were Republicans until a year ago.
Joe Scarborough?
Joe Scarborough, a Republican conservative congressman.
That show
wasn't conservative, and he's extremely liberal now. But go ahead.
But he was, and he was a Republican.
Is he extremely liberal? Go ahead. Keep going, Steve. I'm in your way.
I don't remember him as being extremely liberal. And then the other is Nicole Wallace, who was George Bush's communications director, also a Republican who worked on John McCain's campaign. So they are very critical of Donald Trump, not his policies, but his behavior. And I think given the fog that we're in here, whether or not the media is conservative or liberal, it's kind of hard to see through that fog at this time.
I'm really glad that if it turns out that WGN TV and radio are going to remain independent in independent hands, I think WGN TV, as far as I can tell, when I watch their news coverage, it's pretty down the middle. I don't detect any particular bias. They do a lot of local news. You know, I don't, and so I think that to have that turn into more of
they don't have a lot of local commentary.
No,
they do
don't.
Not have a lot of political commentary on their, no, on their TV station.
Basically not.
Our radio
right?
station does, though.
Yes, sure does, yeah.
I think the problem for all of us is that we get defined conservative or liberal by are we pro or anti-Trump, and that's not true.
No.
But I think that's the way that falls. It certainly does to the president. I think it does to conservative media. If you're not with Donald Trump, then you're uber liberal.
That's the point I'm trying to make.
We've got conservatives on this radio station who make a living beating up Donald Trump.
Right. Right.
I mean, it's funny.
That's exactly my point. That's what I'm trying to say.
I don't think it's, I mean, I'm not pro-Trump, but I am able to recognize when he does something that conservatives agree with, like appoint a conservative justice. And I just think that the rap, and I get the behavior thing, but also when you have someone like Jim Acosta, who is the White House chief correspondent, who's supposed to play it straight every day. I don't care what is said about you. I don't care what he does. He is CNN's chief White House correspondent, and he is hostile. He's been that way from the beginning. He asks loaded questions. He's not a thoughtful, probing person. And so people like me and others see through that. And it kind of tarnishes the whole, it tarnishes him, it tarnishes CNN. Then he goes on Wolf Blitzer and then Wolf Blitzer interviews him about his tantrum in the press room. It's ridiculous to me that someone like him, he's clearly showing his bias. And that's not how he's supposed to be.
CNN is losing its way. I've been saying this for a while. You know, I think a lot of us see CNN as the middle, MSNBC's over there, and, you know, the other guys are over there. And I go to CNN first just to see what the main story is. But every time Donald Trump does one of these ridiculous rallies, they always do the 50 craziest things Donald Trump said. It's one of those clickbait stories, but they feature that. And I think, could
this
you
This is
guys,
online. You're talking about online?
Yeah, right. I don't know if they do a broadcast version of that, but I look at them online, and I think their bias shows.
I just give them credit for limiting it to 50.
You just have to, and we can move on. I could go on and on about him, but I write opinion. That's my job. So I'm sitting here in this microphone. I'm getting paid to share my opinion. I write for the opinion section. My stuff shows up in Perspective, not on the news pages. Jim Acosta is supposed to be a straight up news reporter.
Do you have
reporter.
An example in mind that's really bothering you? Because I know he's a thorn in Donald Trump's side.
I'll do it for her. When he asked Sarah Sanders to say that the reporters are not enemies of the people,
which
is a very fair question, and she should have said yes, and it's shameful that she didn't.
And
the way he asked the question was, come on, we deserve this, we've earned this, please, you should say this. He asked it in a way that was not straightforward in an appropriate way. So I see what you're saying.
Since day one on the crowd size thing, and I only know this because I happen to have a TV on my desk at the old building, so I watched a lot of these
press
conferences. So I've missed out on. I don't have a TV anymore. But anyway, I watched a lot of these press conferences, and it was just always about him, and he's asking hostile questions. You don't have to be that way. You can get to the facts. You can expose the lies of Donald Trump without being an ass. And I just don't think he'd...
I agree with you. But I also know that we haven't been singled out in an event and, you know, had people turn and flip us off. And, well, maybe you have.
Oh, my gosh. You deal with an administration like Rahm Emanuel in the city. You're kind of used to being kicked around and jerked around and blocked and yelled at, and stuff happens to you. So maybe I'm also just looking at it through that kind of a lens.
I just have one last media question before we do our recommendations. Should Alex Jones be kicked off Twitter?
Ooh.
If you were Twitter, would you ban him from your platform? Eric, you go first.
I would, yeah. I mean, I think he is not in the realm of responsible commentary. I mean, too much hatred, too much poison, and that I say. It is a private company, and they have a right to kick him off. If I were in charge, I'd kick him off. Yeah,
I have a serious issue with this. The guy's reprehensible. Okay, he's repugnant. He's a lot of things, but we let the Nazis march in Skokie because the First Amendment allows that. The First Amendment, and yes, this isn't censorship because it's privately held companies, and a newspaper has a right to run whatever it wants to run, and I think these other companies do too. But if we don't let stupid people talk, then we don't know who the stupid people are.
And we can get rid of this guy and still have plenty of stupid people on Twitter, just so you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a fair point. So better that we know the devil than that we pretend he's not there.
And I also think the First Amendment, I mean, that's the problem with this, with something like a First Amendment, is that it protects stuff we hate, stuff that we find repulsive.
I just want to underscore, the First Amendment has absolutely nothing to do with this. It's not, the First Amendment is about the government and the people. It's not about a private company like Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, any of those
Chicago
places.
Tribune, WGN, Chicago Tribune, WGN, all of
these places. If we don't publish someone's, we get this criticism sometimes. Someone will send a letter to the editor, my First Amendment right, you're not printing my letter. No, it has nothing to do with that. You know, and free speech is not about that. There are plenty of platforms and avenues besides these major social media sites that Alex Jones has access to, is having access to
not
now.
Not that many anymore. Yes. He's off of YouTube. He's off of Facebook. But his speech is not curtailed. His access to commercial.
I'll turn this around. With the Daily Stormer, they don't have those. Just the open Nazis. They don't let them have sites. I mean, I don't see a huge difference between the kind of crap that Alex Jones is putting out there and the kind of stuff they're putting
out. Okay, you're in charge of Twitter. We'll go around the room, then we'll do our recommendations.
I kind of agree with both of them. I think people like this generally self-destruct, so I guess I would be more on Scott's side. Like, let him have his platform because he will self-destruct.
Scott, you're going to keep him on Twitter?
Yes.
Eric?
No.
Bertrand?
No.
Yeah, I kick him off. I'm a private company. I don't want him on my thing.
3-2, he's out.
McLaughlin
the island.
Right.
And wrong.
And it went along party lines, if I'm not mistaken.
Morton.
Although, actually, it kind of went reverse. All the liberals said restrict, and the conservatives said allow, if I'm not mistaken
here. These are libertarian-type conservatives we have here on our
program. Yeah, pardon me if I painted you incorrectly. What are your recommendations? What are you guys reading, drinking, eating, listening to that you're liking these days?
It's a Thursday, and usually on Wednesdays in the summer, I spend my time at a park in Highwood, where they have a market, an evening market, they call it, and it's different food trucks and the local restaurants come out, and it's just really a really cool community event. You know, Highwood is, parts of it are very working class, parts of it aren't, but this is a place where, in the suburbs, where all sorts of people get together and just have a good time on summer evenings. It's really kind of a special thing. So I think before the summer's over, you should check out the evening market in Highwood.
Yeah.
But not next week, because I'll be there and I don't want a crowd.
How about you?
You don't want to wait in line. I'm just going to recommend, so my friend's book is finally out. You can get it on Amazon, The Darkest Time of Night by Jeremy Finley. I've talked about it before. It's a great summer read, and now you can finally get it. So.
Fiction or nonfiction?
Fiction.
And just give me the headline. What's the...
It's about government conspiracy and a missing child. And it's written by one of my friends who's an investigative journalist in Nashville. So he kind of blends in all this stuff that he's accumulated over the years as a reporter. It's just, it's a page-turner.
What do you like, Scott Stannis?
I just came back to YouTube, but it was actually shot down and by the title. You understand why. It's called Adult Wednesday Addams. And it's an actress who plays Wednesday Addams as a grown-up. And it's absolutely... hilarious. I mean, there's a line, like one of the episodes. The episodes are like 2.5-3 minutes long.
Wednesday of the Addams Family.
Of the Addams Family. Yes. Although as an adult, she's moved to L.A. And she's, and one of the lines is it's one night stand, and the guy wakes up. He goes, and she's at the foot of the bed, just staring at her. That she still has the pigtails and the weird dress. And he goes, you know, I'd like to talk. I like you. Do you like me? And she goes, are you still alive? He goes, yeah. She goes, you're welcome.
that's charming. You know.
And the Addams Foundation had a cease and desist. It was removed from YouTube for a while. It's back. It's two seasons, and it's very, very funny.
I watched the link that Scott sent over. It was pretty funny.
That's the one night stand one.
That's the one night stand, right. I won't give away the surprise ending.
How about you, Eric?
I'm recommending an app. I've probably recommended this app before. It's called Instapaper. You ever heard of this app?
I have not.
Terrific app. It is the one I use probably the most of any app I have on my phone. And what it does is it allows you to take, if you're like looking through a news site and you see an article you might want to read, you can save it to Instapaper and under the share option on your phone or something, and it goes to this site, and then when you want to read the articles that you've saved, you go there, and they're in perfectly clean form. There's no photos with it usually. There's no ads. It's just text, and really easy to, and then you can file them in various places. And the reason I'm bringing it up, I've been using it for years, and I'll say I love it, but they were in a free model for a while. Now they're having to move over to a pay model, because I actually can't, and have no idea how they make money doing this, but they're going to now ask people to pay a little bit to subscribe to it. I'm going to subscribe to it, and I really recommend that people at least check out the free version of Instapaper.
Whenever I see something on my phone or in a newspaper magazine, I just do a screen grab or take a picture of it, and then I go to my camera roll, and I'm always sort of, you know, flitting through my pictures, but then that doesn't take me to the article. Then I got to go search for the article.
Instapaper, really, trust me on this.
My recommendation is just one. It's on page 14 of the Thursday, August 9th, Chicago Tribune, on the editorial page. If you are a fan of the Blackhawks and Stan Mikita, in his passing, you will see Scott Stannis's editorial cartoon there. My wife sent me a text this morning, and she said, I'm in tears looking at Scott's cartoon, and I about welled up when I saw it, too. If you are a fan of Mikita and the Hawks, I think that's one you cut and frame. And remember, number 21 is well done there, my friend.
Thank you.
I don't know if I should describe it or not, but it's just an image of Stan with his hockey stick skating away, and the city in dark tones in the background and underneath them, and it's really well done.
Thank you.
Okay, that's the Mincing Rascals podcast this week. Thank you, Scott Stannis and Eric Zorn, Kristen McQuarrie and Steve Bertrand, Patty Vasquez and Justin Kaufman did not join us this week. They will another day. Mincing Rascals this week, produced by Griffin Filipich. I'm John Williams. We'll have another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.